The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia Alcoury and today we're talking about one of my favourite subjects. As you'll know, over the years we've covered this subject just because it is so important, and it is sleep. And I'm delighted to be joined by Alexander Collingbourne, who works and runs Sleep with Alexandra. So thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show, Alexandra.
No, of course. Thank you for having me.
So I'm obsessed with this subject. I wasn't until I had children. It wasn't something I even thought about before I had kids. But I think soon as you become pregnant, the issues start with sleep and you realise how valuable it is.
Absolutely.
So let's start at the beginning, Alexandra, and tell us, why is sleep important?
Oh, God, it's so important. It's one of the main things of life that we need to do. We don't realise how important sleep is until we have less of it, I think. I was the same as you. You know, I just kind of thought I would coast through. Especially when you're younger, you feel like you can just get away with it. You know, you would go out drinking, you'd be able to get up the next day, go to work. But when it's sleep deprivation, which is completely different, it's extremely hard to maintain any sort of life with it. I remember from myself, from my own experience, which is how I got into being a sleep consultant, was I would have hallucinations. I wouldn't be able to think straight. It'd actually be quite scary if I was to drive, because I couldn't concentrate on anything for more than 5 minutes. And it's for your health, your overall health, your general health, mental health, but also your actual health. I mean, it increases digestive disorders, there's cardiovascular problems, you know, it's poor immune system, your mood swings. It affects your relationship with everyone, not just yourself and your child, but also your family around you.
Yeah, that all sounds very familiar. And thanks for putting it together so nicely there, Alexandra, because it is something we all forget about, and we forget to value it. And I think so many things are kind of blamed, when actually sleep is what the problem is. And I think if you have a full belly and you're able to sleep, you know, they're the two big big ticks in life. Now, and this may seem like a silly question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Does sleep become less important the older you get?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's still very important from when you're a child to when you're an adult. There's so many things that factor in, and it's for different reasons. When you're younger, you need it for growth and development. And then when you're older, you need it for maintaining and managing. So I always say to my clients, when referring to why sleep is so important, we have this thing called a stress bucket, which we add to every day. So for instance, we'll have, you know, a bill that needs paying, or your car needs to get MOT'd, or, oh, has my baby slept enough this day? You know, the stress bucket gets filled up and filled up. And then we have this important REM sleep, where it's 20% of our sleep that we need, which is the only time of the night where we can relieve that stress bucket. And if we don't get to relieve that stress bucket, then it's very simple. If you don't empty the bucket, and the next day you're topping up on the bucket again, the water will overflow, and so will you. You know, it's quite simple. So yes, it's just so important.
I love that idea of a stress bucket. That resonates with me. And actually, it's a lovely visual, isn't it, to kind of get you to think about how important it is.
Absolutely.
So, Alexandra, we're going to totally milk your expertise today. So I'm going to start at the beginning with babies. Now, I've got my thoughts and opinions about this, but I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. So let's start with babies. Now, would you favour the go with the flow approach to sleep, or having a pretty strict routine in place? What would you say?
So for me, it's very on a case by case basis. So I've had varying clients that range from wanting to go with a more go with the flow attitude to ones who are very keen on a strict routine. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I am very keen on introducing a wake time and bedtime, a similar wake time and bedtime every day, purely because especially at the first 6 weeks of baby's life, that's where your body clock is set. It's called your circadian rhythm. So waking up at the same time and going to sleep at the same time, you're able to set those. So in the morning when we've got light receptors in our skin. So in the morning when the light hits our skin, cortisol is raised, which is the stress hormone. And that's the hormone to wake us up, to get us up and about. As we go to sleep and the lights start to dim, melatonin gets released. And that's our happy sleep hormone. That's the one that's absolutely key. So setting the circadian rhythm at the start is quite important. It's kind of natural. It happens. It's not, you know, you don't have to stress if you can't have the exact bedtime and exact wake time. But if you're able to get similar, like within an hour, then that's something I stress. Routine really worked for me and my children, purely just because I like routine in life. So it worked well with me. But there really is no wrong way of doing it. I think the key thing I say to parents is to figure out what your way is and kind of ignore the noise from outsider people. You know, you'll hear from Karen down the road who's had a baby that slept through from 3 weeks. Just ignore that. That didn't happen. Karen's dealing with her own stuff. You know, deal with yours and figure out what's good for you and accept that. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And you know, yeah. I wish I'd spoken to you about 15 years ago when my son was born, because first of all, I had no idea that the circadian rhythm was set in the first 6 months. I wish I'd known that. That's the first time I've heard it.
Yeah, 6 weeks, that one.
I didn't know. And the other thing is, you're so right about the happy medium, because the problem is you're sleep deprived. You're adult, you know, you've got baby brain, and deciding what the best thing to do is so hard. So you tend to jump for extremes where completely go with the flow, or no, I'm going to do the Gina Ford, you know, way of raising my baby. And you're right, of course, it's about nuance, isn't it? It's about and having a good start and end. It makes so much sense.
Yeah, I think that's actually where we realized we had gone wrong, because how I got into being a sleep consultant was my eldest was the worst sleeper in the world and he would wake every 40 minutes until he was two.
Oh my God.
So I was so beyond sleep deprived, and it obviously turned into postnatal depression and anxiety. Never diagnosed, because you never know when you're in it.
That's it. And I'm sure you're not alone, Alexandra. I'm sure so many moms suffer from the same thing. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. No, it was... there's been good in the end, because I then had my second child very soon after, and I decided, okay, well, I'm in a selfish way. I was like, I'm not going to do this again. I will be going to find out how to crack this sleep. And I went and trained and I went away. And then when I realized there were simple fixes, not for all, but there could be, I just wanted to share it with everyone, because I just know how hard that is. But also, I just remember being that person that would Google at night, in the middle of the night, and sit up and say, right, okay, I've tried this technique, but that didn't work. Now I'm going to try this technique and I'm going to do this. But where we go wrong is we don't stick to something for long enough for it to actually resonate. So for instance, babies learn via our actions. They don't learn via our voice that early on. So if you're constantly changing the routine and changing things too much, so if you go with the flow, then go with the flow. If you do routine, then kind of stick with it, and because consistency really is the key.
Well, that's great to know. And that's another great top tip to bear in mind. Just stick with it. Decide something and stick with it. But of course, you know, therein is a problem too. Like when you're sleep deprived, your problem solving skills become impaired, don't they? And then you're looking for solutions, but you don't have the energy to put them into place. Yeah. And that's where family and friends and partners come in place to help you.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where I come in, really, because I'm there to guide parents. You will actually find, you know, family, especially if they're of a certain generation, will have their own thoughts. I remember being told, you know, sleep begets sleep. And that's the worst advice you could ever be told, you know. If the baby sleeps more in the day, they'll sleep more in night. And that's just fundamentally not true. So I was actually even told that by a health visitor as well. But again, she was of a certain generation where that's what they were told. So
yeah,
it's just learning. But that's where I come in. I'm there to guide you, and I work with the families to whatever routine or way that they want it. Because every family's different and every child's different. That's the thing. There's no one size fits all.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. And there's another top tip. You're busting myths left, right, and center, Alexandra. I'm sure I've said sleep begets sleep as well.
Yeah.
But at some point. But great. Let's move on to toddlers.
And
so do their sleep needs change? And can you tell us how to navigate that? Does it differ from child to child? Are there rough markers you can put in place? How does it work?
Yep, it absolutely changes. So with every growth spurt and every brain development, there's also these things called regressions, which are actually more progressions because the brains are developing. There's all changes. So when your child starts standing, that's a development. When they start sitting, when they start rolling. So all these things are new for the brain and the brain's trying to process it. So that always affects sleep, obviously weaning as well as they get older. So definitely sleep changes. You also go through nap transitions, which seems to be the one that causes the most problems because we never know if we're doing it right. I always say just make sure you stick with the lunchtime nap. That's the one that they carry through until they're about three, sometimes four, and sometimes earlier they drop it. But it's always good to make sure you stick with that one. I always, if I'm doing a nap transition, it would be the afternoon nap I would drop normally, do the morning and then push the lunchtime nap. It's all about figuring out those awake windows. And this is where it gets a little bit technical and obviously a bit more where it's case by case basis, but there's definitely changes when they become a toddler, for sure.
That's great. So another few nuggets. So nap transitions. I love what you're saying. You're saying they're not regressions, they're progressions. I mean, changing the vocabulary around that does make it all more positive, doesn't it? Because, you know, there's something awful about thinking that it's a regression. But if you actually know, it's just part of growing up, it helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I really like that. So, right. And the next question I want, I've so many people I've heard over the years say, oh, if only my children or my child would sleep. And they talk about it as if it is some kind of a magic wand they need to sort this out. And there's a sense of resignation and acceptance that there's nothing you can do about it. I have to say, personally, I find that a little bit frustrating. And I always kind of try to encourage my friends to keep trying to find solutions, because I personally can't believe that sure, there are some children who don't sleep, but it must be the exception rather than the rule.
Well, actually, 40% of children have sleep issues that are considered significant by their parents. So it is quite a vast majority that have sleep issues. I think what it is fine tuning what suits your child. So there'll be some children that prefer to catnap and they sleep at night. There'll be some that prefer longer naps. You know, it's working with your child. And it is trial and error. That, unfortunately, I always say this, that there is no magic button for me to press and say, okay, your child will sleep from now. What we have to do is we do have to figure out, there could also be allergies, there could be a sleep condition. You know, if baby mouth breathes, that's very important. If there was any sort of tongue tie, there's so much to consider, you know. So because the sleep industry isn't regulated, it is quite frustrating when you hear quite a lot of noise, like you don't need to go down a Gina Ford route anymore because we've got so much more research. But obviously, because we're not regulated, there's a lot of noise out there. So it's hard for parents to pick and choose what they believe and what they don't. I remember being the same. So I think the key thing to remember is to go with what you know. You are your baby's expert. So you know what suits them. So write down the fundamentals of what you feel would make your baby happy and comfortable. And then we go from there.
That's great. Okay, so I'm totally wrong. It's a huge proportion. 40% have sleep issues. So I need to keep my opinions to myself. That's shocking. But actually, when you're talking about it, it makes sense. Of course, there are so many mitigating circumstances that affect sleep. But the silver lining I'm hearing from you is that there are solutions.
So, absolutely.
You could be right that your child, you are very likely right if you think that your child has sleep issues, but there are solutions.
Absolutely. You may have a baby that sleeps really well, but then when they go to school, they're a terrible sleeper. You know, there's so many things to factor in, but there are solutions. It's just, we are very much in a society now where we want a quick fix. You know, we can click on Amazon and get the book and it tells us what to do. And unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. We are humans. We aren't robots. There is a lot of trial and error, but that's what I do with my clients. I work with them on guiding you through this. And if we go through a week or two where we feel like this routine hasn't worked, okay, great. Let's pick out our learnings from that and then go away and let's rejig it and get back to, we will get sleep at the end of it, basically.
Well, that's the most important message. Again, and knowing, yeah, there might be a process, there might be new things, considerations you need to take, but there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, and you will sometimes find that there are key elements that just slight changes will help. You know, things like temperature of the room can really help. Some people don't realize how important that is to get the right temperature. But again, I don't like parents to fixate on things like, oh, the temperature must be 18 degrees. If it goes to 17 or 19, it's cool, it's fine. You know, that's life. You know, they were doing this a lot longer, you know, when we weren't here. You know, they've been doing this for years. So yeah, just I don't want parents to panic or put stress on themselves, because when they do that, then that's where I feel like it starts to unravel.
Yeah, and stress is an important thing to try and, I don't want to say solve, but kind of address when it comes to sleep as well, because it's so easy to get wound up by it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there's such a, you know, it's really tough at the minute, especially for new mums, where they're coming into an environment where you have to be everything. You know, we're going through a phase, unfortunately, where mums have to have the dream job and have to have be the dream mum and still be on the PTA and still have the child that eats everything and sleeps. And, you know, it's just unrealistic. So, I always like to make sure that I work with the families just so that they know that they are 100% not alone, and perfection is not what we're after. You know, even if we go from the baby waking every hour to waking every 4 hours, that's huge. You know, let's take the wins. That's what I always remind them. It's just, let's take the small wins. It's baby steps.
That's so reassuring, Alexandra. Thank you. And I'm sure there are lots of parents out there who are very grateful for that support and sound advice, because, as you say, there's too much striving for perfectionism, and none of us are perfect, you know. So it's good to be reminded. And the problem is, I mean, like, my children were born 15 and 13 years ago, and social media was just coming up. Now it must be a nightmare for parents who are trying to navigate all the advice on social media about how to be the perfect parents. There was a time when the only person you dreaded was your mother-in-law or your mother, you know, giving you advice.
Yeah.
But now it's that times 10.
And it's conflicting as well. So you never know which way to pick. And one person will tell you to put the baby down crying and leave it, and the other person will tell you that you're a terrible mum for doing that. You know, it's this way. There's no right or wrong answer. It's more, it's just whatever suits you, whatever fits your family and your baby. And have the confidence to stand by that, you know.
Brilliant. Thanks, Alexandra. So, I mean, there are different amounts of sleep needed throughout our lives. And I can never keep up with it and remember how many hours sleep, you know, children are supposed to have during the various kind of phases of their lives. Would you mind helping us get a clearer idea about that? And how does it change from age range to age range?
So it's a very difficult one, because obviously you could give a guide, But yeah, you don't want parents to be fixated on, okay, well, they have to have two naps today and they have to be a certain amount of time apart and they have to be for a certain duration. So I do have guidelines that we can stick to. However, it's very clear. I want to make it very clear, like, please don't fixate on these timings. You know, if there's half an hour difference here or an hour there. So I'll focus from 12 months because obviously I still consider before that just getting to know baby, you know, figuring it out. So from about 12 months, ideally the time between naps, so we call them the awake windows, you're looking between 4 to 6 hours ideally. But again, that's if it suits your child. And nap duration could be any time between 1 to 2 hours. And the number of naps per day is about 2. But then as you go to more like an 18-month-old, that could then be reduced to 1. And then children from 3 to 5 ideally should be getting around 10 to 13 hours of sleep, including any naps. But again, that's, you know, 10 to 13 hours, that's a big difference. So as long as they're getting, you can always tell when, you know, from certain cues that your child's not getting enough sleep, you know, with the irritability, clumsy, lack of focus, you know, lack of energy, things like that. So you can kind of work it out yourself. You know, you start to know your baby's cues. And then children between 6 and 12, they ideally need between 9 to 12 hours sleep a night. And then from 13 to 18, they need between 8 to 12. So obviously they then become an adult, so we need around 8 to 12 hours sleep. I would love about 14, but I have 2 young boys, so I'm lucky if I get that.
Oh, I know. Gone are the days. I don't even aspire to reach 12. I'm absolutely ecstatic if I manage to get 8. That's really helpful. So teenage years do change the amount of sleep that's needed. So from 13 to 18 years, roughly 8 to 12 hours sleep.
Yeah, definitely. But they're also dealing with a lot of factors, like you say, with social media and things like that. Like, I always recommend for all my clients, whether it's a 2-year-old or a 12-year-old, that at least an hour before bed, there's no screen time, because the blue light can be really counterproductive to sleep. And you have the screen light, it's not very good for sleep. And also things like diet and exercise, that there's so much to factor in.
Yeah, brilliant. And so, I mean, the thing about it is, there's such a massive difference between the toddler stage. You know, I think when they start to go to school, generally, and please forgive me for saying generally, because I know there'll be parents listening who are going, that didn't apply to me. But generally, when they go to school, they're so tired, they sleep better for a phase. And then they go to bed without too much of a fight. And then puberty hits, and it seems like their clock is just completely changed, where they want to be awake late at night, they want to sleep in the morning. I mean, what should we do as parents? Should we be encouraging them to stick to the earlier time, going to bed around 10 o'clock, so that you can keep some semblance of a chance that they'll get 8 to 12 hours sleep? Or
yeah,
really, you know, because you're hearing increasingly that teens just need have a different clock, and school should be later to facilitate them their new body clock. Can you help us navigate that?
Yeah, I don't know if I don't have teens personally, so it's not something I've had to deal with, but I don't know if I agree with that in the time change, because what would happen when they then go to work? You know, we still have, you know, commitments at an earlier time. I think with teens, it's, again, it's still consistency. I know it's difficult because they have their own mind. I mean, even toddlers have their own mind. But I would encourage, you know, self-care is very big at the minute, which is great. But I mean, not self-care where they have, you know, especially mums, where they get a bath on their own or they get to go to the toilet. I'm talking about true self-care, where they get time to exercise and they get time to have a walk and take care of themselves and actually make a lunch, which is edible, and not just pick off their child's plate. And it's just positive associations around sleep. I would have conversations with teenagers about the importance of it, because I think they're very smart, you know, and they want to take care of themselves. They're so lucky that they're growing up in this era where it is about taking care of yourself. So if you reinforce how important it is to get sleep and take care of yourself. And I mean, like I said, screen time's obviously something I know that we'll be banning in our house. I mean, we already do. We, for bedtime, we go upstairs. Each of my children have a bath, and while they do that, they read their books. And then we all come together as a family and we sit on my eldest son's floor and we play like a card game or something, just to kind of, there's a positive association with the bedroom and it's just like a nice winding down period. So that's what I would recommend. Obviously, it might be different when mine are teenagers and I'm dealing with two teenage boys and I'm just desperate for them to sleep in because I don't want to be around them, but we'll have to wait and see.
Exactly, exactly. As you say, there's no one size fits all.
Absolutely. So
I'd like to ask you about our special educational needs community, because I frequently hear from friends that children who have ADHD or autism struggle more with getting regular sleep or sticking to a strict sleep routine. Have you got any advice for our parents of children with special educational needs?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, again, that is even more on a case-by-case basis because every child is so unique in those ways. So when dealing with a child who's particularly, say, on the spectrum, for instance, I would look at the plan, whereas with a child who's maybe neurotypical, I would recommend a bath time every night to help release the melatonin, you know, a nice lavender massage. Whereas with a neurodiverse child, that might not work. So it's about adapting the routine that suits them and fits them. It's a very tricky one because I'm still learning, as we all are, about, you know, the spectrum and how we can help. And it's just about hearing the parents and hearing from them. And just, I normally take extra care to make sure, and I like to speak to any healthcare professionals just so that they have their advice when dealing and how I can help with sleep, because it is such a tricky thing. But there are techniques out there. It's just obviously very specific to case by case basis.
Thanks, Alexandra. So we have a regular topic on the parents show, which is to, you know, we always like to explore the idea of putting your own oxygen mask on as a parent, because we often hear that you can't help your child if you're not in a fit state yourself. And honestly, I don't think anything is more important than sleep. You touched on food and having healthy snacks, just not eating off your kid's plate. So that kind of counts as one of those oxygen mask moments. So what advice would you give to adults about sleep, about their own sleep, bearing that in mind?
I suppose it's very cliche, but it's obviously like happy mum, happy baby, you know, happy parent, happy baby. So I completely agree that if we aren't in a fit state, then how can we teach and, you know, be around our child if we're not capable of taking care of them? Because I know there was definitely times when I was so sleep deprived that I don't even know how I got through the day. I think I used a technique of pretending I was not very well on the sofa and my son would play doctors and I would just lay there, or he'd, you know, I'd give him some makeup and he could just draw on my face while I slept.
Brilliant, brilliant.
But yes, I completely agree that we have to take care of ourselves. With my sleep plans, when I put them together, I always leave a bit at the end of how we can get through, because obviously if you're going through a sleep change and you're working on a sleep technique, it is difficult. So I always make sure that we encourage, I mean, obviously if you have outside help from family and friends, and that's amazing, but I know that that's not always possible. So we figure out a way, we sit down and we talk about how we can get time for you, whether it's writing in a journal or doing some meditation. I'm big on breath work. I think that's really helpful. It's definitely helped me. There's some ways that we can work together to get you some, not just your self-care as having a bath, like I said, because that's just general hygiene.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic that you integrate that into your sleep plans. It's great to know, because as you say, happy baby, happy mom, yeah. Happy baby.
Well, it's good. I can sit here and tell parents on what to do and how to do it, but if they can't physically do it, then I'm no help at all. So I mean, I am here to help them. So that is definitely a big part of it. I also offer a, with my plans, I offer a postnatal depression support pack where it helps you spot, because not everyone likes the word, but it just helps you look at how there's postnatal depression in dads and how that can be seen, because that's not spoken about enough. And also how, for partners, how they can see postnatal depression in or anxiety in their partners, and things to look out for and ways they can help and people they can speak to if needed.
Fantastic. Thanks for bringing that up, Alexandra. It's really important to get a balance and think about the dads too, because as you say, it's just not mentioned. It's just not talked about.
No, definitely not.
Right. Before we wrap up, I'd love to get your top tips. What would you say are the most important things to bear in mind? To be honest with you, I've already got loads of top tips, like the circadian rhythm in the first 6 months, happy medium, don't go to the extremes, sleep beget sleeps is a load of nonsense, so forget that. It's progressions, not regressions. I love the vocabulary that you've been using, like nap transitions. Again, it's a positive thought. You can't have them sleeping during the day like 3 times a day forever. So you know it's going to change. It's a transition, and I love sticking with the lunchtime. And even the awake windows, again, it's just a lovely way of thinking about it instead of thinking about, you know, desperately fixating on naps, you know. But great. Any more top tips for us?
So my main one is the one that I repeat constantly, and it's just consistency. So that doesn't mean routine. That just means consistency in your actions. So when I put together a sleep routine or technique for a client or a family, I would make sure that they give it at least 2 weeks. So if you want to stick with a certain routine that you've read online and you feel confident with that, you can't know fully if it's worked unless you've done at least 2 weeks. Obviously, if you feel like your child is absolutely against it, it's not working, you're welcome to stop. But like I say, we teach our children via our actions. So if you change too much, the poor child is just so confused, like, oh, do I sleep now? Do I not sleep now? Am I up now? Am I, like, you know? So try and keep it simple. And another one of my key terms that I love to say is I want to strip it back to basics. Let's cut out all the noise. Don't listen to Karen down the road. Ignore Instagram. Let's focus on the basics. What does your child need basically with sleep? What do they need? What are their cues? Let's figure that out and then we'll go from there. So my top tips are definitely consistency and stripping it back, just keeping it basic and try not to overdo it.
That's brilliant. Alexandra, wise words, great advice. Thank you. Thank you so much. And if anybody wants to get in touch, if they like the sound of your sleep consultancy, how can they do that?
So I have a website, it's sleepbyalexandra.co.uk, and they can email me, contact me on there. I do also have, if they didn't want to buy any sort of packages, and because I like to work on all price points, I do have guides. They basically, it goes into a detail of everything that I've spoken to today, but it's more specific to age ranges. So I have a newborn, baby, toddler and child sleep guide, so they can download that, and they've got that forever, so they can keep referring back to, because I know, especially when you're sleep deprived, you have these conversations with sleep consultants and they throw so much information at you and it's gone completely over your head. So I always say, don't worry about writing anything down. I have this for you. You have the guide. Well, I'll write it down and make it super clear, because you know, you just got to remember to survive. It's survival technique at the minute. So yes, they can contact me on my website.
That's brilliant. Alexandra, thanks so much for joining us today. And it's important in the name of balance for us to say that obviously there are other sleep consultants out there. So we've got to abide by the old Ofcom rules. And please check out other sleep consultants. Or if you like the sound of what Alexandra has to say, you have our website. But thank you so much. It's such an important topic. And it was brilliant to get your advice.
No, thank you so much for having me.